Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. I'm here with my co-host, Alfred Addis, to bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, August 11th, 2015. Good afternoon, Al.
Hi, Melody.
It's been an exciting day today. Finally, something happens. And not so sure, it's good for everybody, but certainly we're perhaps seeing things unravel a little bit sooner than what everyone has anticipated. And it's interesting, August, as I mentioned just last week, how August is one of the most active months in the stock market. And, certainly we all look to October. That's when you had the biggest moves, one-day moves in the stock market. But yet August has still been pegged to be the most volatile in the stock markets. And it seems like it's meeting its definition today. So an active day in the markets today. We had gold, by all rights, it should have been up $50 or more, but hey, we'll take $450 at $109.60, up $450. Silver's up 11 cents at $15.43. And before I move on, I just want to mention we did have a high in gold of $11.20 and it dropped back. This was in the early set of the morning, and it just hovered around this 11.09 all day long after we hit that 11.20 mark. And pretty much the same thing for silver, although it didn't have that big of a swing. We had a high of 15.51 and we're at 15.43. Platinum was up 3 at 992. Palladium was down 8 at 605. And the USDX today was stronger by 0.04 at 97.22. And crude oil took another big beating today, down 1.63 at 43.33. And the paper markets today, let's get to that section of the day. And, of course, there was a lot of pressure on that area due to the Chinese currency and the changes that they made overnight. And we'll talk about that after I get these market numbers. And really, it's not that big of a deal. Yes, the Dow is down 200 points, 1.21%, 17,402. The NASDAQ is down 65 at a little over 1.25% at 5,036. And the S&P not down quite 1% at 2,084. The 10-year yield, that certainly is going down a little bit more at 2.14% on the yield. And we did see the euro gain today at 1.10, up 0.19. Yeah, Germany was down big based on the Chinese news, 2.68%. And that is even after reports that the Greece deal is looks like it's pretty much of a done deal. London was down 1%. And so this was all related to the China surprise. It's not the October surprise. It's the China surprise. And, of course, they devalued their currency. Now, they used the word devalue, Al, and we're looking at about 2% against the U.S. dollar. I'm not sure that should really classify as the devalued. It certainly has gone down. They're certainly doing everything possible in order to stem their losses, but it does show that they're certainly having the problems. But this is the largest devaluation in 20 years. So when you look at 2% against all the other currencies, the European markets and so forth, it's not that much. But then again, this is the first time in 20 years. So we certainly did see a lot of changes in the global stock markets. And this should help China with their brands. Now, to me, it all comes up to the big question, Al, is what is they're doing behind this? You know, we heard the IMF didn't want them, wanted to be put them off into the special drawing rights. They didn't want to go in there, and they wanted to put that off for another year. Is this their way of saying we're going to do what we want when we want? And so there.
It might be, because when you talk about the Chinese yuan being devalued by 2%, it's devalued by 2% in relation to the U.S. dollar.
Correct.
All right? It's not as if we take a gold coin and we shave 2% off the gold coin, and now you've only got 9.98% of an ounce left over. This is like a teeter-totter.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the analogy is always there, the teeter-totter. We've got the yuan on one end of the teeter-totter and the dollar on the other end. And when one end goes up, the other end has to go down. Now, the question is, when one end goes up, before we get to the question, the point is that when China says, oh, we're going to devalue our currency, we're going to subject it to inflation for 2%. Well, it necessarily means that the dollar is therefore going up in terms of deflation. Deflation is increasing by 2% for the dollar. It's just a teeter-totter. If one goes up, the other one's got to go down. So when they do this, the question, when they inflate the yuan, they indirectly deflate the dollar. And the question becomes, are they inflating the yuan simply to stimulate their economy, and that's what they claim, and that may very well be the truth of the matter, or is this an act of financial warfare directed against the United States? When their dollar is inflated by 2%, excuse me, when their yuan is inflated by 2%, the dollar is deflated by 2% in relationship to the yuan. I've argued for some considerable time. The dollar depends on inflation. It has been the policy to inflate the dollar, government policy, Federal Reserve policy, since at least the end of World War II, and certainly since 1971. Inflation, 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 which is why we get a dollar that is today worth roughly a nickel in terms of purchasing power when I was a kid. It has, that's evidence. The dollar is only worth 5 cents. It's lost 95% of its purchasing power. That's evidence of government policy. Inflate, inflate, inflate. But for the last 18 months or so, we've seen the government allow the currency to deflate, at least in relationship to foreign currencies. And we see it happening again today with with China, they're going to inflate by 2%. We're going to be deflated by 2%. Government can't withstand persistent long-term deflation. No debtors can. Deflation is deadly for debtors. The federal government is the biggest debtor in the world. It can't tolerate deflation for long. It has, to much to my surprise, it's tolerated it for 18 months, at least on the international level. It's bad for exports. It's bad for domestic employment that's involved in manufacturing exports. There's a bunch of reasons. It's certainly bad for debtors because they're paying their bills off. They're paying their debts with more valuable dollars. Deflated dollars are more valuable. They have higher purchasing power. So what I'm wondering, as fantastic as this idea may be, did China inflate its currency by 2% just to try to stimulate its economy? Or is that the excuse, and what they really did was kick Uncle Sam in the shins and say, well, let's see how much deflation you guys can handle before you got to fold up your tent. We need inflation. In our monetary, in our debt-based monetary system, we need inflation. And we haven't been getting it, at least internationally, for the last 18 months or thereabouts. And I'm wondering how long this can continue. And I'm wondering, did China actually just give Uncle Sam a kick in the shins here, Melody? Or do you think it was just an innocent devaluation that you want to suffer to stimulate their domestic economy? What do you think?
It's probably a combination of both, you know, but I really think there's certainly things far deeper. As mm-hmm. I mentioned earlier, you had the IMF wanting them to hold off until, you know, next year, fall of next year, in order to include them in the basket of currencies. And, you know, maybe perhaps they decided, well, you know, fine, we'll just do it on our own.
No,
so I believe the Chinese will do whatever it takes to keep the Chinese economy on course. And they've had major problems. You know, I mean, their stock market was relatively, you know, non-existent until here recently, when it just soared, and then we had the pullbacks of the 30%. And, you know, so they will do whatever is possible to keep it going. And I mean, we've seen what they've done, the threats that they've made. You can't sell shares, you can't short the markets, companies have to buy back their own shares. They're certainly riding the people, the other countries that China does business with, like Brazil and some of these other countries, even in the BRIC nations. I mean, you're talking about you know, they get all their money also from China, so you know, China, you know, these other countries are hurting because China's not doing as well. But everybody forgets, why is China doing so well? Why did China do so well?
Well, why were they doing
it? It was because of the United States. So, you know, it's just it's going full circle. And that's all it's doing. And, you know, our economy never rebounded. It will never rebound to what it was. It was a fake economy. It was all based on debt. And you cannot have a society growing based on debt. And, I mean, it's so simple, but yet people just...
you can't have it growing indefinitely based on debt.
Of course, no.
But you can make it work for a while,
for
and they
have.
For a
period of time, and they did.
They made it work for a couple of generations, but you
and
inevitably
here we are.
Come to the point where... if you and you have to get into deeper debt. Because we have a debt-based monetary system.
Exactly.
Virtually everyone listening to this program has heard that term. Not necessarily everyone understands it, or at least thinks they understand it. But if it's debt-based, what does that mean? It means our perception of wealth is that the more debt you have, the richer you are. And the average person look at that and say, well, that's a crazy idea. You can't say the more debt we have, the richer we are. Well, you can support it. Those of you that are living in a home that's, say, worth $250,000, living in that home is an expression of wealth. But did you pay cash for that house when you bought it? Or did you borrow the $250,000 from the bank and promise to pay it off over the course of the next 20 or 30 years so you could appear to be rich in that $250,000 home now? You went deeper into debt in order to create the illusion of your wealth. You did the same thing when you bought a new car. You can drive down the road, hang your arm out, the rest of this sort of thing, and pretend that you're, you were a hot item and the rest of it. But the truth is, you went into debt. You went deeper into debt to get that car. And the deeper you go into debt, the more you can have. The more land you can buy, more factories you can buy, more stocks you can buy, more gold you can buy. In this system, debt really is the foundation for our wealth. And a couple of things flow from that. First off, now that's not the truth in an asset-based system. If you have an asset-based money system, you have based on gold or silver or whatever, you don't want any debt. That's trouble. But in a debt-based monetary system, debt is good. You wind up emulating Gordon Gekko in Wall Street, the movie most of you probably saw, where he stands up and he says, greed is good. Well, in this debt-based monetary system, debt is good. Or at least that's the way it's sold, and that's the truth of the matter. If you don't have, you can take someone who has no debt. And how rich are they? I mean, homeless people don't have any debt. They're living in cardboard boxes. They don't have any debt. In theory, we would sit back in a rational world. We'd say, well, technically, those homeless people, they don't have any debt. They are financially worth more than the billionaire who's living in a palatial estate, and he's got all these cars and pools and tennis courts and all the rest of this sort of thing, and he's in debt for $1 billion. He's in the hole for $1 billion. The bum is not in a hole at all, and he's living in a cardboard box. For me, this is part of the evidence, the idea that debt is wealth, and it's also part of the point. If anything happens to destroy any of our debt instruments, it's contrary to the best interest of the economy. The economy can't continue if we start destroying debt instruments like bonds and mortgages and stocks. They turn out to be worthless. What does that mean? It means we have destroyed some of our wealth. The way we play the game now, those debt instruments are the foundation for much of our wealth. If we void those debt instruments, all of a sudden we destroy the wealth. We destroy part of the money supply. And it tends to push the economy deeper into recession and perhaps depression and perhaps even economic collapse. Which means it should be more difficult. If this idea I'm expressing, if it were true, it would mean that the government should try to inhibit and prohibit people from filing for bankruptcy, because bankruptcy wipes out your debt. And in this world, it means it wipes out your wealth. And they can't tolerate that. And in fact, they changed the bankruptcy laws in 2005 to make Chapter 7 much more difficult. Very difficult to access Chapter 7. It used to be easy. Just go in and say, I want to file for Chapter 7. Fine. Fill in the forms. Write off all your debt. You walk out and you don't owe a dime. Nowadays, you've got to jump through some real hurdles to get to Chapter 7. And when you do, if you've got any money left after the bankruptcy, you're still going to be paying on the debts. You can't wipe out all your debts with Chapter 7 anymore. I think that's what we are seeing perhaps in Greece. The reason they've dragged this thing on so long is the objective is to prevent Greece from filing for bankruptcy and forcing the world to admit that $453 billion or euros worth of Greek bonds are worthless. They write them off. All those bonds are worthless. They destroy $453 billion worth of wealth. And I think the system says, oh, my God, we can't take it. Don't do it. We can't destroy the debt. If we do, we destroy the wealth. We live in interesting times, crazy times, irrational times, and sooner or later, reason will prevail, although before it does, we're going to have to trash the existing money system, and we're going to have to go back to an asset-based monetary system. Let's take a break for some commercials. I'm here with Melody Cederstrom. I'm Alfred Addis. This is Financial Survival, and we'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
If you have a heart condition and emergency rooms and medical doctors are not an option, you need our emergency heart attack kit. 5 concentrated liquid formulas enter the system in 60 seconds to protect your heart muscle, strengthen heartbeat, increase circulation, relieve pain, and make breathing easier. When seconds count, you want all the help you can get with our emergency heart attack kit. Easy to use and portable in a 1-pound compact kit for your purse, briefcase, or car. Call Apothecary Herbs now for your emergency heart attack kit toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at thepowerherbs.com.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on American Voice Radio Network and Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
American Voice Radio Network is heard on Galaxy 19 at 97 degrees west, transponder 23, frequency 12115, audio PID 2595. AVR is heard on the left side audio channel, and AVR 2 is heard on the right side audio channel. Remember, both AVR and AVR 2 are on Galaxy 19. Same network, double the choices.
Hey folks, I'm Ralph Vadas here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver at 1-800-375-4188 for all your gold and silver coin needs. During the break, Melody and I were talking, of course, and Melody mentioned a strange thing. People are starting to call former customers from 10, 15 years ago. Are starting to call.
It's 20.
Yeah. Well, all right, fine. Yeah, 15, 20. Yeah. Now, this is, and the reason I mention this is it is one of those signs. It's like the U.S. Mint running out of silver eagles or restricting the sale of gold eagles or whatever. It's evidence that despite what the markets, the paper markets are saying, people are beginning to realize, wait a second. It's time to get some gold. There is a beginning, you know, it's these leaves in the breeze. It's not absolute proof, but it's evidence that there's a change in sentiment. Some people are saying, wait, time to get some gold. I haven't got some for quite a while. Now's the time. Let's go.
And I think today with Hoffman, yeah, 2%, we'll have to see how this plays out. But it's certainly showing China is stepping up. It's stepping up to show that they are a major economy and they're going to do whatever is possible. And who anticipated this? Everyone is so focused on what is going to happen in September that you don't see what's going to happen today. And I think this is a prime example that, you know, folks, you can't wait for September or for things to happen. Because they just do, and you'll never be prepared for them. And, you know, I think we live in a time where situations like this. And again, we'll have to see how this plays out. You know, gold could be down $40 tomorrow, or it could be up $100 tomorrow. You know, the stock market regained some of its losses today. You can see the currencies play differently through overnight. You know, we don't know. We have to wait and see. But the whole point is, if you get positioned now, when these changes occur, because I'm sorry, I don't care how long people have been in the business, how long they've been analyzing these markets, they do not know the day these things will begin to unfold. And we are closer every day to things unfolding. And that's what you have to keep in mind. And things will happen so quickly that most people will be left with losses that will be unbelievable.
Well, we've talked about this in the past, but here's an article from Market Watch. Dirty little secret advisors won't tell you. They did a study. This goes back probably 2 months ago, thereabouts. Most investment success, any advisors, is due overwhelming to luck rather than skill. In other words, there's people in the market say, ha, 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 I predicted the collapse in 1987 or 1990, whatever. I'm a guru, I'm a genius, because I correctly predicted these problems. And this article says UCLA finance professor Brad Cornell has proposed a simple formula for gauging the relative investment importance of skill and luck. Upon applying that formula to a large sample of mutual funds, he found that 92% of the difference in those funds' annual returns were attributed to random chance. And Melody was talking about nobody can predict the top, nobody can predict the bottom. This is evidence of that. There's a bunch of people that say, wow, ha, we're at the top, we're at the bottom, blah, blah, blah. Nobody knows for a fact where we are. All right? Not for an absolute fact. And those who get it right are doing just like taking credit. Ha ha, I bet on number 12 on the roulette wheel because I'm a genius and a psychic. No, you're not. You just got lucky. That's all. All right.
I saw one guy on CNBC today, and then we'll move on, and I just want to make another comment. They were talking about Alibaba, and they asked this guy and this analyst if he owned it. He says, well, he says, I did. He says, I don't anymore. He says, I bought it at about the level where it's at now, and it ran up to, what, 120, 150, or 180, I think, was the high. And he says, and I didn't sell it. Because they always, here's an analyst, they tout him around on all CNBC programs like he's some big genius and everything, and he finally got out about where he bought it. So, you know, he missed out. And this is just paper. It isn't like gold. It isn't like silver. I mean, we buy and we hold them until the right time. And we haven't seen that right time yet. And so, you know, they don't know. And here's an article, Alan. This was released today. Stock scams are about as old as the market itself. But the combination of worldwide information technology and automated programs that can make thousands of trades in a second has created new paths for potential frauds. You know, this is a new news, but it's interesting. The U.S. government, and I wonder if they're including themselves in their little report that they did, say alleged scammers have used methods including rapid trades, fake regulatory filings, and news reports to get an advantage and make profits. I mean, these people can create websites in hours.
Yeah.
Where they can promote a stock or a share. They do the pump and dump. And people believe everything they see on the Internet. To me, it is kind of fascinating. But, you know, in May, you had the Dow Jones. In May 2010, the Dow Jones plunged a bunch of points. And, you know, they said it was due to computerized selling program. Well, you know, I think they're setting people up for two things. One, to remind people that, yeah, the markets are rigged. Pretty simple. There's a lot of scams out there, and they're going after these people. They need to go after themselves, but they're going after these people. And I think they're also setting this up so when we have these huge market drops, you know, people aren't relating to the structure of the system, they're relating it to, oh, you know, they can blame it on a scam, they can blame it on a...
Well, they can blame it on what somebody says, oh my gosh, the interest rate went up 0.25%, and that was the explanation. Or the unemployment rate is higher or lower than what we had anticipated. We're coming up with these explanations, but they're just kind of, often they seem like nothing more than an excuse, a fictional excuse for what really happened there. Anybody really know? Does anyone really know? And part of the implication is, do you want to invest in a stock market that virtually everyone understands is rigged in ways where prices can change in no time at all? You know, the same thing is true. It's true with gold. They also have a rigged market. But when you get done with the gold, you have something tangible in hand. All right? And if your fundamentals are right, you hang on to it, and it'll turn out to be a good investment.
I mean,
what is going on with paper? I mean, paper, and these computers are making things move at thousands of trades per second. The whole thing has become irrational. Do you have any confidence in that?
And now that everything is blamed on hackers.
Yeah, I know.
Or everything. Now, really, folks, you know, you can't tell me they can't have a system that is hacker-proof. You know, but everything is based, to the degree that everything is getting hacked, no, I think that they're using that a little bit too much. But today the U.S. government said there was a group of hackers and security brokers that broke into a computer system of three companies. They published news releases and then traded on this information in various of hundreds of press releases before the public even saw them. And of course, these people were in Ukraine and U.S. They made over $30 million over the years from trading these shares of Caterpillar, Align Technology, and other companies that were based on unpublished releases. I mean, it's you know, people really don't have a chance, and unless you're dealing with these insiders that, you know, the guy over in Ukraine and, you know, that can hack into your computer system. So you know what? They're going to have to fix the problem.
How?
I'm sure they'll come up with something.
The only way they're going to do that is you need to keep your wealth in a non-digital form.
That's correct.
All right? That's the only way you're going to be absolutely – that's your only – probability of being able to preserve your wealth against hackers is you've got to have your wealth stored in a non-digital form, which could be land, could be buildings, and owning a factory and a bunch of things like that, and it can be gold and silver.
My point is the government will come out and say we're going to have to fix the problem. And you know the problem with government fixes.
Yeah, I don't think they can, though.
No, they won't, but they will use it. They will create a crisis. And they will come up with some sort of, just like your pension plans and your retirement accounts, they will create a crisis, they will create and then they'll come in and we're here to help.
But the crisis won't be their fault, will it?
No, it won't.
No, we'll find someone else to blame. Government has always got somebody to blame. The thing that bothers me a little bit is the reports that a group of hackers did one thing or another. I think when we really get into some serious hacking, when there is some real trouble that results, I wonder if they're going to allege a group of hackers or will we have a lone hacker in the same sense we had a lone gunman back in, what, 62? When John F. Kennedy, 62, 63, can't recall clearly, when John F. Kennedy was shot by a lone gunman. I mean, groups imply conspiracies. You wonder, why aren't they spying on these groups? Can't the CIA identify these groups? But a lone gunman and a lone hacker, that makes for, don't have to dig too deep. Don't have to look into that very deeply if we have a lone gunman, lone hacker. So, blah, blah, blah. What else, Melody?
Anyway, so a lot of companies with this China situation, you have the semiconductors, they got hit today. You know what? KFC, the parent company, Yum Brands, I think they also include Taco Bell. Do you realize they get half of its sales from China? I just didn't think the Chinese would eat KFC and Taco Bell.
Chinese will eat anything, Melody. I mean, that's one of the things they've always been, and to some extent, I mean, they're not particular, because food is, their population has always been so large that you got to eat whatever you can find. If it's old still, chow down, you know, and take advantage of it. So a lot of vegetables, pigs, snakes, whatever, you know, if it's organic, they eat it. So that means they'll even go after KFC.
That just surprised me. Yeah. Half, not just a third, or I mean half. So anyway, we have a fight over oil, and certainly we've seen a lot of pressure. You have Iraq's Kurdish region has begun to sell oil independently of the central government.
And I have to turn to the and this is evidence that Iraq, the nation of Iraq, is having laying the foundation for something like a civil war. And it may wind up being divided before this is over, because the Kurdish portion of Iraq, they used to have a deal where they would sell their crude oil to the central portion of Iraq, essentially, the government of Iraq, and the government, they and the Kurds claim, no, the government's not giving us enough money, and therefore we're going to sell it on our own. Sell Arabs, well, we've pulled it out of the ground, we're going to sell it. Well, it lays the foundation for a separation and division within Iraq. And this shouldn't come as a surprise, because Iraq isn't a real nation. Its borders were declared in 1920 by Western powers who divided up the Ottoman Empire after World War I. Those borders ignored ethnic and religious differences. They just said, we're going to set up a border. Here it is. If you're on this side of the border, you're in Iraq. The other side, you're over in Iran or Afghanistan or whatever. And the people didn't, you know, that doesn't sit well with people. You're not going to tell me what nation I'm in. I've been in a certain nation, believe myself to be a nation for maybe centuries. And all of a sudden, the Western powers just said, here's the deal. Well, now we're under a lot of stress, and the Western powers can no longer maintain those geographic and territorial borders. All right? As soon as they can't hold them up anymore, the Kurdish people want to break loose, and they are selling the oil that they pump out of the ground, and what are we going to do about it? What's anybody going to do about it? They're going to bust loose in the same sense that Crimea broke loose from Ukraine. They're going home, you know? And it's evidence, you know, that a nation has been defined for centuries as one race, one language, one culture, one religion, and one fixed territory. That's a nation. When you try to homogenize these nations where you have mixed some everybody in from every place, you are flirting with national integrity. And before you're done, it just may be that your nation won't hold together. And point here, from my perspective, is when we look at the possibility that the Kurds may break loose from Iraq. They may separate from Iraq. We're laying the foundation for the same sort of situation in this country, insofar as we allow illegal aliens to continue to pour into this country until finally we're going to see the southwestern United States break loose from the rest of the United States to join Mexico or become its own country or whatever. We have an obligation, in my opinion, to protect the nation. We have an obligation to protect its culture. Most people don't agree with me. They don't appreciate that argument. But I think it's important, and I think if we don't grab hold of it and hang on to it, the day is coming when we will wish that we had. Let's take a break for some commercials. When we come back, we've got a caller. Yvonne is on the line, and we'll see what Yvonne wants to tell us. I'm Alfred Addis here with Melody Cedarstrom and Financial Survival. We'll be back in a moment.
Don't make make the aspirin mistake. Aspirin was discovered by mistake during World War II and suppresses your immune system and prevents blood clotting. Don't expose your body to risk when you can use a natural inflammation and pain reliever called Extra Strength Pain Relief by Apothecary Herbs. Discover the power this formula has with Salicin to enter the system in 60 seconds to work hard and relieve pain for 12 hours. Whether it's arthritis, sports injury, or flu, you can relieve aches, pain, and swelling with our Extra Strength Pain Relief formula. Call Apothecary Herbs now, toll-free, 866-229-3663. That's 866-229-3663. International callers dial 704-875-8010 or order online at www.thepowerherbs.com.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, and Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Hi, folks. We're back. Melody and I are here on Financial Survival, and we've got a call from Yvonne. What up, Yvonne?
Yeah, how are you doing, both of you? I hope
Hello.
You
can't
complain.
I have a question. Did you say that John F. Kennedy was killed by a lone gunman?
That was the allegation. The allegation was that Lee Harvey Oswald was the only shooter. And if there's no conspiracy, it's a lot easier to deal with. Once you get into these conspiracies, which means two or more people, then there's cause for investigation. Who's supporting? Who else is in the background? It makes it a whole lot easier if we got just one lone gunman.
Okay.
Whether that's
I must have misunderstood then, because I have a different perspective on it. But anyway, so...
Well, I understand the truth may be different. The truth may be different, but the government,
absolutely,
in my opinion, doesn't... They're pretty flexible about telling the truth, if you catch my drift. You know, it'll get... It may not even be believable. Not only not the truth, but not even a believable lie. That's what aggravates me a lot of times.
Yeah,
tell me a lie, I can at least believe it.
Yeah, just like the one bullet theory, you know, hitting two people. The other thing is, I noticed that the Ukraine is starting to rev up again. They have evidently a large battle going on in eastern Ukraine between the two, the Ukraine army and the rebels. And it's starting to boil up. And certainly, the other thing which probably you touched base on, it was the economic issue, which China is starting to devalue their yuan and trying to adjust and taking down both Europe and U.S. with them. So I do feel that since they own about $2 trillion of our debt, that they do have certainly an effect on our economy one way or the other. And it probably will be more negative than positive. And so I just I just don't foresee any improvement in overall economy, either in Europe or EU or here in U.S. It used to be that when U.S. sneezed, the world got a cold. Now when Chinese sneeze, I think the world gets a cold now. So I just wanted to comment on that.
What's the cold remedy? What's the remedy for all these colds, Yvonne?
Well, it won't be too much. I think we are underwater. You know, it's $18 trillion.
That they admit to. Yeah.
Of debt.
But some people calculate it's over $200 trillion.
Yeah, I agree. I think overall, if you take all the other derivatives and everything else which we are involved in, I think it is over 200, yes, I fully agree. And so in that respect, I don't see any improvement. And certainly we are not producing more jobs. I mean, it could be in retail or, you know, they say 20,000 here, 10,000 there. But overall, you know, we are not really improving our economy one bit. I think if we have any indication, I think it's going to be negative than positive.
Why do you think the economy is not growing?
Well, one is certainly the impact of how the economies are tied together throughout the world. That any impact on one area, either China or Europe, will affect the other economies. The other thing is that there is very much uncertainty about the U.S. dollar and its future. The IMF is supposed to be meeting in South America in beginning of October, I think October 9th, something like that, October 9th through 16th, and normally they have meetings in D.C., so I don't know why they moved it to South America, but a lot of...
Because it'll be safer. It'll be safer, that's why.
I fully agree there, yes. And so, I mean, in essence, there are a lot of indications which point to something, you know...
imminent.
Imminent happening, you know, in the next few months, you know.
Yes. So, a lot of people agree with that assessment. I'm beginning to wonder about it only because there's so much almost universal agreement that something's going to break loose September, October, by the end of the year at least. It seems like you just hear report after report. I'm sitting there thinking to myself, you know, if I heard one or two reports, I'd say, that could be a point here. I hear this many reports and I wonder, is it true or
anything
this?
Plus, what's happening in Middle East is, you know, again, points to a much more sinister approach with Turkey now getting involved, talking about no-fly zones and stuff like that, which Russia is opposed to it. So I think there are a lot of counterbalances happening in Middle East as far as the trends which originally were planned for Middle East. Now they are starting to change, and the more uncertainty you have, either in economics or in overall world safety and harmony, you will start having problems and negative impact on overall situation, you know, world situation and. Particular U.S.
That's what people are inclined to say. That's what people are inclined to say. But, you know, we talked earlier in the program with this idea of a comparison between the debt-based monetary system that we have today and the asset-based monetary system that we've had for most of our history. And the problem with a debt-based monetary system, what is the national treasury? It's the national debt. The more debt, if we have a debt-based monetary system, the more debt we have, the richer we are.
Yeah. Well,
I think the reason I'm only speculating here. This is just pure conjecture. But I think the reason that the economy is not growing may be that people are no longer borrowing to the same degree they did in the past. And if they won't borrow, we can't create any more wealth. That's how we create wealth. With an asset-based monetary system, we create wealth by producing assets. And it's not just gold and silver. It's producing automobiles and televisions and computers and homes and roads. We produce assets and we become wealthier. In a debt-based monetary system, if you want to get wealthier, you need to have more debt. And if people have learned a lesson out of the 2008 recession, say, I'm not going to borrow anymore. It may be. I'd have to look. I don't know the numbers. I may be completely mistaken on this. But it's something I mean to look, investigate, and find out. Has the amount of borrowing by the American people been dramatically reduced? Because if it has, we're not producing any more debt, and debt is our form of wealth. How can we prosper? How can we prosper if we're not producing more debt? In a debt-based monetary system.
You said there are people are borrowing. I mean, if they are borrowing, they are getting more into debt, which is even worse.
No, I say, but are they borrowing as much as they did, say, in 2007, 2006? I don't know what the historical rate of borrowing is, and I don't know precisely how to measure it, but what is the average debt per person in this country? How much was it higher back in, say, 2000 than it is today?
Let me just say this. It wouldn't be the same because you got to remember a lot of that debt came from homes. You had all those equity loans.
Mm-hmm.
You had all that debt. No, that has not been reproduced.
I'm not just talking about national debt. I'm talking about
consumer debt. Consumer debt had all those equity loans out of their homes. Their homes were ATM machines, basically. And so I think a lot of that debt was eliminated, but yet you have increased debt. You know, people are buying cars, people are buying homes. I mean, so they're using their credit cards again. But I don't think it is the same as it was back then, or we'd have a different economy today. And you would feel it,
I think that's true.
You know, the numbers don't match. The employment numbers don't match. We have more people off the labors. They keep falling off the employment numbers because they're giving up. They're hopeless and they can't find a job and so forth. So, no, the economy is not what it was back in, you know, prior to the recession of 2008 because it never came back. That's the whole point. And, you know, somebody, I just want to do this email real quick. We had Bob from Iowa. He sent this in. He says, we have to remember that the rulers of China are very aware that there's a extreme economic hardship. The masses may try to overthrow the ruling communist elite. All nations manipulate their currencies. In the Midwest, the agricultural economy is suffering over not being competitive due to an expensive dollar versus competition from Brazil, Argentina, Ukraine, Russia, Australia, Canada, and so forth. It is a race to the bottom, trying to see what country can make.
But we're not race to the bottom.
Let me finish what he has. It is a race to the bottom, trying to see what country can make their currency the cheapest in the short term with the notion that their country will obtain some kind of competitive advantage no matter for how short of a time. And you're right, because their currencies go down and ours gets stronger.
And they say ours is stronger, but the fact of the matter is it becomes less useful.
Correct.
People aren't buying our stuff. Why? The dollar is stronger. Do you think it would be a good thing? Dollar is stronger. No, you need a weaker dollar in order to sell more stuff overseas.
But what
the world
are you selling?
I don't know if we're selling anything. All we produce is debt. Debt is our most important product. We don't need factories. I think it's part of the reason why they ship factories and jobs to China in the first place. Making machines, we produce debt. That's what we do in this country. And we do. I mean, it sounds like a dumb idea, but the fact of the matter is we produce more debt than any other nation on the face of the earth.
Well, I think we are digging ourselves in a deeper hole.
I agree.
Eventually
we will never pay the debt. Greece will pay its debt. Greece is going to pay its debt before we pay ours.
Yeah, because they do have something of of value, such even like Acropolis or whatever. I mean, they can always, you know, mortgage their historical monuments and so on. We don't have that, even that luxury.
We already do that. We're giving up national parks to the United Nations. Yellowstone, if I understand correctly, is a UN national or global preserve or whatever it is. I don't know what this is. They are allegedly in charge. We've been giving up our stuff to some degree in this country.
Well,
you know,
I think because of the debt we are creating and we are trying to sell off and sell to China, Europe, or whoever wants to buy it, Japan, and
who wants to buy it? I mean, anyone who looks at it has to realize we can never pay it off. It's like Greece issuing some more bonds. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to recommend everybody buy the next tranche of Greek bonds. Nobody's going to buy any Greek bonds. They can't pay the bills they have right now.
Yeah, you know, they made an agreement with EU about 93 or 94 billion of dollars, euros. And they can pay off what they do. They borrow, then they pay off Europe what they own. So I mean,
but now all they did is change the debt from their right hand to their left hand.
Right.
That's all they did. They used $94 billion to pay off part of the $540 billion that they're in debt, but they're still in debt for another $94 billion or whatever it was that they borrowed.
Absolutely. Yeah.
It's crazy. It's irrational. It's bizarre. It's inexplicable. It is so strange, but I have little doubt that it ultimately flows. This is part of the inevitable logic when you go into something like a debt-based monetary system. I'm sure it seems pretty clever at the time when you start it up. But once you get into it and you get addicted, it's like doing crack. It's going to destroy your life sooner or later. It might not get you now or next week or next month, but you keep doing the crack, guess what? You're going down. You're going to pay a terrible price. We're going to do the same thing.
Yeah, it's a death spiral. We are in it, and I fully agree that there is no recovery. I think we are just...
there's recovery, but you got to give up. You got to go back and get rid of... So somebody's got to have brains enough to say, look, get rid of the debt-based monetary system. And that won't be an easy sell because most people don't understand money in the first place. But get rid of the debt-based monetary system, restore an asset-based monetary system. And I'm not saying this is going to happen, but if you did that, we could make a recovery. If you won't do that, we're going to be a third-world nation. We're out of time, folks. I want to thank Yvonne for calling in. I'm Alfred Adisk here with Melody Cederstrom on Financial Survival. We will be back tomorrow. In the meantime, may the good Lord bless you, me, Melody, Yvonne, and Frank, the producer. Bye-bye.
I work all night, I work all day to pay the bills I have to pay.
Ain't it sad?
And still there never seems to be a single penny left for me.